Chapter 9. The Visitor. As soon as Pauling had left, Fiona got up and walked slowly around the room, feeling her heartbeat increasing. If she'd answered Adam Henry's letters, she wouldn't be facing this now. But facing what exactly? Unnecessary contact with a case that was closed? And more than that, but there was no time to consider. She heard footsteps approaching. The door swung open and Pauling brought in the boy. She had never seen him out of bed and was surprised by how tall he was. He wore his school clothes, grey trousers and sweater, white shirt, a thin jacket, now all wet, and his hair was damp and untidy. A small bag hung from his shoulder. The boy took a couple of steps and stopped close to where she stood and said, "I'm truly sorry." In those first moments, it was easier to hide her confusion behind worry for him. "You look frozen," she said. "We'd better bring that heater in here."
"I'll bring in myself," Pauling said and left.
"Well," she said after a silence, "how did you find me here?"
"I followed you in a taxi to King's Cross and got on your train. I didn't know where you'd get off, so I had to buy a ticket to Edinburgh. At Newcastle, I followed you out through the station entrance and saw you get into a big car, so I asked people where the law courts were. When I got there, I saw your car."
She watched him as he spoke, noticing the changes in him. No longer thin, but still slim. Stronger in his shoulders and arms. Same long, beautiful face. He seemed alive, passionate, and hungry for life.
"I waited a really long time," he went on. "Then you came out, and I followed you through the town until you got back in the car. I looked for judges' lodgings on my phone, and this place came up. So I got a taxi here, climbed over the wall, and waited outside, wondering what to do. Then someone saw me."
Pauling, looking red-faced and unhappy, came back in with the heater and turned it on. He put his hands on the young man's shoulders and moved him in front of the warm air. Before he left, he said to Fiona, "I'll be right outside." When they were alone, she said, "Shouldn't I think there's something scary about you following me home and then here?"
"Oh, no," he cried. "Please don't think that. It's not like that."
He looked around quickly.
"Look, you saved my life. And it's not only that. My dad tried to keep it from me, but I read your judgment. You said you wanted to protect me from my religion. Well, you have. I'm saved."
He laughed at his own joke, and she said, "I didn't save you so that you could follow me across the whole of the country." The fan heater made a strange sound and went bright red. Then it slowly went back to normal. She suddenly felt angry with the whole place. These lodgings were cold and damp. Everything was old and needed work. How had she not noticed before?
"Do your parents know where you are?" she asked. "I'm 18, I can be where I like."
"I don't care how old you are, they'll be worried." He put his bag down on the floor.
"Look, my lady, enough of that, it's Fiona."
As long as she could keep him in his place, she felt better. "Now, what about your parents?"
"Yesterday, I had a huge argument with my dad. We've had a few since I came out of hospital, but this one was really big. We were both shouting, and I told him everything I thought about his stupid religion. In the end, I walked out. I went up to my room, packed my bag, got all the money I had, and said goodbye to my mum. Then I left."
"You must phone her now."
"No need. I texted her last night from where I was staying."
"Text her again." He looked at her, both surprised and disappointed.
"Tell her you're safe and happy in Newcastle and you'll write again tomorrow. Then we'll talk."
She stood and watched while he quickly sent a text. In seconds, the phone was back in his pocket.
"There,"
he said, and looked at her as if she was the one who had questions to answer. She crossed her arms.
"Adam, why are you here?"
He looked away and paused. He was not going to tell her, or not directly.
"Look," he said, "I'm not the same person. When you came to see me, I was ready to die. It's amazing that people like you could waste your time on me. I was such an idiot."
She pointed to two chairs by an old wooden table, and they sat facing each other across it. The two bright ceiling light shone down on them, lighting his cheekbones and lips. It really was a beautiful face.
"I didn't think that you were an idiot. But I was. Whenever the doctors and nurses tried to make me change my mind, I just felt like a hero telling them to leave me alone. I was pure and good. I liked it that my parents and elders were proud of me. At night, when no one was there, I imagined myself making a video on my phone. I wanted it to be played on the television news after I died, and for everyone to be proud of me and love me. I was such an idiot."
And where was God in all this?
"Behind everything. These were his instructions I was obeying. It was mostly about the wonderful adventure I was on. I would die beautifully and be loved by everyone. This girl I know at school stopped eating 3 years ago when she was 15. She dreamed of becoming so thin that she died, like a dry leaf in the wind. She wanted everyone to feel sorry for her and blame themselves afterwards for not understanding her. It's the same sort of thing with me."
Fiona thought about him in that hospital bed. It wasn't his illness that came back to her. It was his excitement and innocence.
"So this wasn't so much about your religion then," she said. "More about your feelings."
"My feelings came out of my religion. I was doing what God wanted, and you and everyone who didn't share my faith were just wrong. How could I have got myself into such a mess without being a Jehovah's Witness?"
"It sounds like your school friend managed it."
"Yes, well, I wanted the same thing as her. You know, wanting to suffer, loving the pain, and thinking that everyone's watching and caring, and the whole world is about you and your weight."
She couldn't stop herself from laughing. He smiled at his success at amusing her. They heard voices and footsteps in the hallway as the guests left the dining room and crossed to the sitting room for coffee. The boy looked worried, and they sat together in silence, waiting for the sounds to fade. Adam looked down at his hands.
"Adam, I'm asking you again. Why are you here?"
"To thank you."
"There are easier ways." He breathed out heavily and put his hands in his pockets. For a moment, she thought that he was getting ready to leave.
"Your visit was one of the best things that ever happened to me," he said passionately.
Then, quickly, "My parents' religion was a poison, and you removed it from inside me."
"I don't remember talking about your parents' faith."
"You didn't. You were calm, you listened, you asked questions, and then you said a few things. It's this thing you have, a way of thinking and talking. If you don't know what I mean, go and listen to the elders. And when we did our song," she said quickly, "are you still playing the violin?"
He nodded.
"And the poetry?" "Yes, lots. But I hate the stuff I was writing before."
"Well, you're good. I know you'll write something wonderful."
She saw the sadness in his eyes. She was stepping back, being the kind aunt. She took a couple of steps back through the conversation, wondering why she was so worried about disappointing him.
"And what is this thing I'm supposed to have?"
she said.
When I saw my parents crying like that, really crying and laughing with joy, everything became obvious to me. Of course they didn't want me to die. They love me. Why didn't they say that instead of always talking about the faith? That's when I saw the situation as an ordinary human, ordinary and good. It was like an adult had come into a room full of kids and said, "Come on, stop all this nonsense, it's tea time." You were the adult. You knew, but you didn't say. All of love and life that lie ahead of him, that's what you wrote in your judgment. Everything changed after the Sally Gardens. Fiona, I can almost get through this piece of music by Bach without making a mistake. I'm going to be in a play, and thanks to you, I'm full of Yeats.
Yes, she said quietly. Then, as he leaned forward on his elbows, his face hungry and excited, she got up. Wait here. She paused for a moment, then went outside and spoke to Pauling quietly. When she returned, she said,
So what are you going to do now? Where are you going to go?
He wasn't happy about the question.
I've got an aunt in Birmingham, my mother's sister. She'll have me for a week or two.
She's expecting you?
Yes, I mean, well, I think she is.
She was about to make him send another text when he reached his hand across the table, and just as quickly she pulled hers back and put it on her knees. He put his face in his hands and couldn't bear to look at her as he spoke.
This is my question. When you hear it, you'll think it's so stupid, but please don't just reject it. Please say you'll think about it.
Well?
I want to come and live with you.
She waited for more. She could never have guessed that he would ask this, but now it seemed obvious. He had thought about it hard.
I could do jobs for you, housework and shopping, and you could give me lists of books to read, you know, everything you think I should know about.
He had followed her through the country, through the streets, walked through a storm to ask her. It was one step further on from his dream of walking and talking all day on that ship. Crazy, but innocent. After a long silence, she said,
You know that isn't possible. I wouldn't get in the way, I mean, with you and your husband.
Finally, he looked up at her.
When I've finished my exams, I could get a job and pay you some rent.
She thought about the spare room and its two beds, the toys in the cupboard, so many of them that sometimes the door would not close. At last, without turning, she said,
We only have one spare room and lots of nephews and nieces. You mean that's your only objection?
There was a knock on the door and Pauling came in. It will be here in 2 minutes, my lady, he said. And left again. She rose to her feet and leaned down to pick up Adam's bag from the floor.
My clerk will go with you in a taxi, first to the station to buy you a ticket to Birmingham tomorrow, and then to a hotel close by.
After a pause, he got slowly to his feet and took the bag from her. Despite his height, he looked like a small child in shock.
Is that it, then? He said.
I'd like you to promise me that you'll contact your mother again before you get on the train. Tell her where you'll be. He didn't reply. He followed her to the door and they went out into the hall. There was no one there. Caradoc Ball and his guests were in the sitting room behind closed doors. The front door was open and the butler was talking to the driver who had loud music coming from his taxi. Pauling was crossing the hall towards the driver, probably worried that the butler would create a problem. The boy started to say,
We haven't even...
But she raised a hand to stop him.
You must go.
Lightly, she took the edge of his thin jacket between her fingers and pulled him towards her. Her plan was to kiss him on the cheek, but as she reached up and he bent low, he turned his head and their lips met. She could have pulled back, she could have stepped away from him, but she didn't. She stayed there for a few moments, the feeling of his skin on hers taking away any choice. It was more than a kiss that a mother might give her adult son. Over in 2 seconds, perhaps 3, time enough to feel the softness of his lips, of all the life and all the years that lay between her and him. They pulled slowly apart and may have come back together again, but there were footsteps approaching on the steps outside. She let go of his jacket and said again, "You must go." He followed her out into the fresh night air. The driver got out and opened the door for him while she gave some money to Pauling. She had intended to give it to Adam, but suddenly changed her mind. Adam got into the taxi and stared straight ahead. The music had been turned off. Already regretting what she had started, Fiona moved around the car to look at him, but he turned his head away. Pauling got in the front next to the driver while the butler closed Adam's door. Wrapping her arms tightly around herself, Fiona hurried up the stone steps as the taxi drove off.